With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young boy! Continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers split their games against the Minnesota Timberwolves, giving you one of the more frustrating losses of the year and a pretty damn fun win. With me today to talk about it is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I think these two games were a reason you hashtag watch the games. Real Hoopers know, because one was a 4-point loss. One was, I believe, a 2-point win. And boy, were they very, very different.
They were really different. I know you don't really want to talk about this. Just pulling back the curtain here. Carter really wanted to talk today because me being in Winnipeg, Carter being in Columbus, you want to talk about Patrick Laine's debut with the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. I know that's what's on your mind, but we're going to stick to basketball if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I guess if I have to.
Yeah. Let's first, before we get into the fun that was last night, I do want to talk a little bit about the first game against Minnesota, because that was one of the poorer efforts we've seen from the Cavs. I know it was just a 4-point loss, and I know we got scolded for calling it the worst loss of the year, but relative to the competition and like even Garland, who put up 17-5, I think on pretty decent efficiency, I thought it was one of his worst games just because relative to the competition, relative to their just taking a look at their energy levels, that was a really, really tough game to stomach.
Relative to the month of February, they're about to run smack dab into. You got to win the ones you can, and you certainly shouldn't no-show them. And there was just a lot of slop, Drummond, as is per usual, caught most of the ire and very much deserved it in the second half when he played real selfish, was just not making easy passes out of hard double, triple, quadruple teams. And can you just slop up shots that had no chance of going in? But boy, was it a terrible effort from A to Z. You know, poor Larry Nance, became very clear that he shouldn't be playing on his wrist. A non-factor offensively. Picked up some sloppy fouls in that first game that took him out of the game quick. And the attention to detail was just terrible. I mean, you know, like transition defense, I think, might be the way we know whether this team is plugged in on a night-to-night basis. I think that actually might be the number one barometer for, like, are we going to get a fun Cavs game or not? Because when they are paying attention to their floor balance, sprinting back on defense, communicating to pick up assignments, then I think we're going to have a fun night. When they played the transition defense, they played against the Wolves with, you know, several 5-on-4s because Darius just didn't run hard back. That's when you know you're going to be in for a long night. And I hope the Cavs know that too, because, you know, this is just not a team that can afford to give away free points. And I think it's a good bellwether for their performance.
I agree. And I'm happy you mentioned Darius because you had pointed him out. I think that night that his transition defense was particularly poor, and he was terrible on that end of the floor because he was not getting the calls he wanted. He was kind of moping a little bit. I don't like diving too much into body language discussions, but it was bad, right? And it was clear that they were trying to take advantage of the fact that the Timberwolves do not have any interior defense. That team is a mess, particularly with the guys that are missing, right? They're shorthanded. And I thought this, God, I'm losing my voice. I thought the second game was a much, much better example of how to attack that, right? Where they're running pick and roll. they're not attacking the rim at the expense of their 3-point shots. And it just was a much better balance because they just didn't have that on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, they just played better basketball. Oh, you know, I think a lot of people are going to want to say, you know, be very reductive, and you know, we're gonna save this conversation, but and just say, you know, in Jared Allen, out Andre Drummond forever, problem solved. Right. And sure, to some extent, you know, Jared Allen played a good game, where Andre Drummond played a bad game and contributed to, you know, bad games for others by playing kind of a selfish brand of basketball. Don't think it's that simple though. I think that the whole team kind of just realized they got their asses kicked and decided to play with a little more pep in their step. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, again, it's a 2-point win. It's the worst team in the league, probably at home, probably should be expecting better than that. But it's all vibes, baby. and this team just played a lot better, a lot harder. They had some lapses as they tend to do. Minnesota shot a little bit better than they had, on tough looks, which is what happens when you let a team get comfortable against you, by the way. Cue Austin Carr saying that for the 5,000th time. And yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the way it goes. But, you know, what I want to see, what have we always been about, Justin? We're not about the win column. We're not really that into the point differential. All we have ever cared about is good process. And I think they took a step in that direction in the second game.
Right. Quote our buddy Dave Dufour on the podcast, there's 72 games this season, try not to have a take about every single one of them. And I think this was a prime example of that because we saw the temperature of Cavs Twitter swing with both of these games pretty dramatically. To your point about it being a 2-point game against Minnesota, Allen, Garland, and Sexton, when they were out there together, they outscored the Wolves by 23 points per 100 possessions. A lot of that was due to the fact that, hey, yes, Andre Drummond's out, but you know who else is out? Kevin Love, one of our best players. Larry Nance Jr., one of our best players. We're missing depth. We're missing a backup point guard in Delly. It's like, it's not a complete roster at this point. I think that's something that's important to keep in mind. But the biggest difference was the effort. Like, they just played better basketball. And these are some of the growing pains, right? Like, you don't, even when we had LeBron, there wasn't a consistent confidence that this team was going to show up against every single team. Like, there are growing pains when you rely on young players. And it seemed like in that first game against the Wolves, they just felt like they could turn it on at the end of the game and just win it. But that wasn't the case. They never started taking care of the basketball. There were still all those turnovers. And these are the type of mistakes you have to make. This is why it's important to capitalize on this season and go through these growing pains, because you can't assume that next year or the year after, my money's on next year, you're just going to be able to flip the switch and make playoffs. Like, you have to go through this process now.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, it's been funny with this team specifically, because I think that we've had a more fun time watching them compete and lose to teams that were supposed to beat them than we've had. And I think that is because this is a team that is so dependent on playing really hard and working hard together, especially on the defensive end. And their margin for error, sure, they have Jared Allen now, they have Okoro, they have Nance when he's healthy. But their defensive personnel is not so that they can just like go 70%.
Yeah.
And, you know, against these great teams, we've gotten to see them against, you know, Celtics game notwithstanding, go 100% when they know they kind of need to bring it. And, you know, again, thinking against the Wolves, they just thought, you know, they could just kind of show up.
Mm-hmm. And as much as we've pointed out, and many people have pointed out the difference when it was Jared Allen in there versus Andre Drummond, I genuinely think Nance sitting out and having Torian Prince in there, having that spacing, made a really big difference. Because the reality is, since Nance hurt his hand, the Cavs do not have a stretch four. You can go to Jetty, but he's probably in the conversation for worst defensive player on the team. Like, you're not getting spacing from that position. And when it's Isaac Okoro, Nance, who can't really shoot because his wrist is bothering him, and Andre Drummond, who's trying to get post-ups, that doesn't work. And I am looking forward to when Kevin Love's back, because I do think Love and Drummond in the short term and Love and Allen moving forward is going to be something that works out really well for this team. But it was interesting to see, even though it was against the Wolves, the difference that it does make once this team goes perimeter orientated, because more than avoiding just the post-ups, Garland and Sexton were running the offense consistently. There was more kind of pace and space to the game, more pick and roll, which they haven't really been doing a whole lot of. And it's a flash, right? It's a proof of concept of what the core three can potentially be.
Yeah, and I will say this. For all those people who are convinced that Andre Drummond lost us the game on offense on the first night, the Cavs' offensive rating in this game was, let's see here, it was not good. It was 103.1. that would be worse than their league-leading defensive rating the first, like, 6-7 games of the year. So they're still not scoring efficiently here. So let's not just pretend like, oh, you put in Allen and now they're going to score with aplomb. It's not that simple. It's not that easy, but you're right that, you know, you have to read between the lines in a game like that and mm-hmm. see how those double drag sets with Garland running with the ball and Allen being the second screener on the double drag, how they you're able to generate good looks. You know, you mentioned Torian Prince and being a stretch four for them. He went 1 of 7 from three. He had a terrible night, but, like, nevertheless, the process looks better. And, you know, that's what we need to look at.
Absolutely. And I think it was particularly exciting for Garland because I think for whatever reason,
he played great.
There hasn't been a ton of patience with Garland this year. I think some of it is we've already gone through this with Sexton. Maybe you'll learn this, Carter, and you can relay this wisdom to me, but I'm just going to make assumptions as someone without a kid. I feel like with the second kid, you have less patience. You're not micromanaging the same way you did with Sexton. We've already gone through so many growing pains with Colin Sexton, and now he's probably the best player on the team. I think he deserves to be an all-star this season. So maybe we just don't want to go through the same process with Garland and we're kind of rushing it. But seeing him run a pick and roll offense was so much fun. You can tell how much more comfortable he is doing that versus dumping the ball into the post and kind of standing around the perimeter and kind of shuffling to maybe get a shot, maybe create for others. Like, he had 17 potential assists, 11 of those were converted, and that's not even counting all the times that he passed to Jared Allen, which resulted in free throws where he shot 14 free throws. Like, this guy was dropping brilliant passes. And to see that work, to see Garland, Sexton, and Allen click all on the same night on their first time starting together was about as encouraging as can be.
Justin, would you like me to respond to your point or that god-awful analogy that did not work at all?
You know what? Dealer's choice. You can go wherever you want.
Okay, we'll start with the analogy. Parents care less on the second kid. That's the whole... That's like...
I realized it midway through, but I was like, if I say it with confidence, it's still going to sound great.
There's no parent. That's like not a, that's just public knowledge. That's public domain, buddy.
I literally experienced it as the older kid.
So love you. Swing and a miss. On the other point. Yeah. I mean, Garland played a hell of a game and it was weird because he didn't have that efficient of a game as a scorer, you know, mm-hmm. 19 points on 18 shots. I think people would, you know, probably pick some nits at that. That's hardly a true shooting percentage, you know, Garland kind of number. I do think he adjusted over the course of the game, basically stopped attacking soft and started putting his chest into guys a little bit on the way to the hoop and just put on some pretty dazzling footwork. Like, that was certainly those end of game shots were probably the best touch he's ever shown around the rim in his career. just really, really nice stuff. But the playmaking, man, 11 assists, 2 turnovers, as you said, 17 potential assists. He was really, really controlling the game. And you know what's funny is when this team struggled in this game, I thought it was when Colin had to run with second unit guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, in with the Dotsons and the Jetties and the Princes of the and the McGees. And I almost think you might have to swap that and put the, you know, Sexton need, might need a little bit more room. Part of that, I think, was because Windler ended up getting benched for having a second sloppy game in a row. You know, I don't think that's a permanent benching by any means, but, you know, the spacing on the Sexton lineups wasn't quite there. But, man, Garland made every, you know, bit of his minutes as a creator, and they really just didn't have a good answer for him. He was really the best part about that offense, and Jared Allen's numbers you can pretty directly correlate with Darius Garland.
Yeah, and I agree with your Sexton point. I think our buddy Ben at Real Cavs Fans on Twitter had pointed this out, where it's really clear that the Cavs need a backup point guard. We need kind of a second guy, even if it's a combo guard, even if it's someone like Dante Exum that isn't the most experienced ball handler. Just having that alongside Sexton is going to make a big difference. And it also made me think of once Kevin Love is back, because one, imagining Love with Okoro, with Garland, Sexton, and Allen, like, that is really fun. That's going to be a nice fit. But it also makes me think of Larry Nance going to kind of the bench role, where he can be one of the better six men in the league, and you can use him with Sexton in those bench lineups so that you get that supplemental playmaking that helps unlock those lineups. But, I mean, the reality is, whether it be wanting Jared Allen to start over Andre Drummond, whether it's wanting to get the Cavs to sign a backup point guard so they can better utilize those lineups, right now we kind of have to accept that there are going to be some short-term concessions being made for the long-term planning. You're keeping that roster spot open because you understand that if you are moving Andre Drummond, you're likely getting multiple players back and you have to have that space available. You also understand that if you're going to move Andre Drummond, you're probably better served to start him in the short term, even if you don't like it from just an aesthetic standpoint, because it's going to keep him more engaged. It's going to help keep his trade value up. And these are the things that, yeah, maybe it's less enjoyable. Maybe it costs you a game some nights. Other games, it might win you the game. But these are things you have to do to position the team to be in the best position possible for the future.
A really inappropriate analogy just popped into my head that I'll tell you about after the podcast, because it's it's too inappropriate for now. But this is not a take that I expected you to go down. I thought you were going to be on team, let's just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and start Allen.
No, you keep starting Drummond for the short term. I mean, let's be honest. The Garland, Sexton, Drummond as a pairing, they have almost a +9 net rating. It hasn't been bad. Yes, it's frustrating. Yes, it is not maximizing those two right now, but I don't think it necessarily hurts their development. It's forcing them to learn how to play off ball in different ways. You're going to have to learn how to score and make an impact in multiple ways. And it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off for defense right now. They are trading off offensive potential for what you gain defensively. And you know what? Like, it's not the most enjoyable, but I do think it's what's best for their future.
Yeah, I agree. Though it's hard to say, because when Love comes back, how much do you just go in your brain, let's just get to where we're going, you know? Like, and the reality is, Andre, his incentive structure should be a good soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Because he probably doesn't want to be bought out, because he loses bird rights, loses sign and trade, et cetera, though his market's got to be getting worse. I mean, this recent run has kind of, I think the Cavs should look to sell high, if you know what I'm saying. Cause like, I feel like his value and the way people view him fluctuates, but like, you know, if they can't find a trade for him, which is obviously, I think everyone agrees that's priority one. I'm sure Andre agrees that is priority number one. But if they can't find a trade, he's still incentivized to be a good soldier. and compete and be a good bench player for this team.
Yeah, I understand but where you're coming
personality from. Gets in the way here. Like,
I mean, personality does get
pride
in the way.
Gets like, in the way.
I think even his defensive effort has slipped a little bit since the Jared Allen trade. I think that's a fair criticism. I think it's also a criticism that can be spread across the team.
Yeah, I think the whole team's just kind of lost focus a little bit. I don't want to put that just on Andre.
No. And I think it's important to make that distinction because, I mean, that's part of the challenges of making the playoffs as well is you can come into camp with focus, doing all the right things, but especially as guys kind of went in and out of the lineup and you lost some of that chemistry and the continuity that you had. I just think that the effort slips, especially in a long season, especially on the road. The Cavs haven't won a road game in a while. I think that's one of the big differences, but I do think that you want to keep him as engaged as possible. I think part of force feeding him in the post is understanding that by doing that, you are going to get a more engaged Andre Drummond on defense, and that is going to help increase your chances of winning the game. It's not my favorite thing in the world. You're right to assume that my nature says just go with the future. Let's scrap things. Let's just have fun. Like, that's the way I normally go. But I do think you have to prioritize the long term with the team, and the reality is, you got about a month here. You got a month until it's the All-Star break. You have a couple of weeks off, then it's mid-March. Like, it's not that long of a period of time. And some of the teams that you're playing against here, you're playing the Clippers twice. You want to display Andre Drummond in those games. You want him to play well if he does, in fact, play Wednesday. Questionable for that. But you want to show him off against these contenders we're playing against because those are the teams that are going to have an interest in Andre Drummond.
And here's the thing, you know, it's not like JB has two options, either play Jared Allen with the young core or don't. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that binary. You know, if Andre is the first sub off the bench or the first person to go to the bench and then plays and comes back in with the second unit, not the worst thing in the world. If Jared Allen comes in at the 7-minute mark of the first quarter, are we really like losing that much? Off the development of this team, I'm pretty dubious of that. And, you know, so I get it. I get the take. I get the reason you might want to say, let's just start Allen. And, you know, maybe Andre misses a couple games and Allen just keeps shredding it this much.
Yeah.
And makes it near impossible, which is certainly an outcome that feels plausible. I mean, it literally just happened in Brooklyn, though. Yeah. Drummond is obviously much better than DeAndre Jordan at this stage of his career. But I don't find it likely, and I think that it would probably be wise not to rock the boat until they can find a deal.
Yeah, the other thing is, I mean, a lot of what the Cavs are doing is merit-based, right? Like, that you have to go out there and win and lose your job. And as much as Andre Drummond plays a style that is frustrating to watch at times, he hasn't lost his job. Like, it's not like he's playing so poorly that you got to make a change. If in any single game Allen is outplaying Drummond, Allen's going to play. He's going to close those games. I'm pretty confident in that because we've seen it already in a couple instances. So if his play slips, if he comes back and the back ailment that he's dealing with right now is kind of limiting him so much to some extent, and JB says, hey, you're not really yourself right now, let's get your minutes down, let's keep you impactful, let's keep you fresh, have you come off the bench, yeah, maybe that's something that they're open to. But until Andre Drummond actually loses that position, I think you're better off giving him the benefit of the doubt in the short term. And who knows, like, this wasn't as much of a problem until Nance hurt his wrist. Like, it was working when Larry Nance was shooting threes, and we expect Kevin Love to be back within the next week here. So maybe once Love is back, things level out a little bit more. It gives you that front court spacing that you needed, gives you the supplemental playmaking that he can bring to the table. Like, Kevin Love solves a lot of these issues, and I don't think enough's been made that the Cavs have been doing this without one of their best players. Like, for all the concerns that people will raise about his defense and whatnot, he is still a net positive player. And it's probably good for the Cavs, like, from a narrative standpoint, because I worry about narratives and what people are going to bring up. It's probably good that the defense has slipped a little bit before he came back, because now it can't all be blamed on him.
No, I will say I'm not looking forward to the mouth breathers of Cavs Twitter if he comes back during this hell month that they're about to to endeavor on, and they lose four or five games in a row. Well, Kevin's washed. I'm going to be so put out, and I'm not going to be able to not argue about it. I'm going to need you to be a good friend and tell me to log off.
Okay. I'll keep an eye on that. Did you happen to catch the road tripping episode with Kevin?
Oh, it was so good.
It was so great. So one thing that did happen in that was it made me a little sad about Kevin Porter Jr. Because, we fully understand what his potential is. I mean, we're one of his biggest fans. And
I'm still a lot sad about Kevin Porter Jr.
I'm still a big fan moving forward. But to hear him kind of put it all in perspective and, like, not shortchange his potential and what he can be, it kind of, like, it's clear that while he understands how good KPJ is, that, like, he and the rest of the team understood it. To hear how excited Love is about what's still left in Cleveland and what they've got going on really kind of reinforces, I mean, unless he's just the most skilled liar of all time, but it kind of reinforces what we've said before, which was the primary frustration of Kevin Love is he's a competitor and he wanted to be in a competitive situation. I mean, after the trade deadline passed last year, he was playing hard. He was playing hard on both ends because the team was competitive. They were winning games. They were around 500 for that stretch. And he seems genuinely excited to come back and get into the mix here.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this was the dream scenario after it all went so wrong in the first year after LeBron left. And the worst case scenario happens. He gets hurt. The team gets blown off the floor. They pivot to the rebuild. Start Sexton, fire Lou. Everything falls to shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and, you know, I think that we have kind of litigated on both sides of that debate on who was done wrong, who was owed what, you know, like I will kind of still maintain my take that, you know, they sold Kevin a bill of goods that was dependent on him not getting hurt for the year for his first year post LeBron. And, you know, when that changed, the organization had to change, you know, as much as those players were upset that, you know, that they pivoted to youth. I think I don't see a road to competitiveness with that, with what was left of that roster. So I get it. I get the hurt feeling. I get it all. But like the dream scenario was, sure, he wanted out. The Cavs have been trying to find a place for him. But the dream scenario, this is a champion. This is a key piece of the best era of Cavaliers history, is to have this have a happy ending. And a happy ending to me is the Cavaliers competing their way into being a place that Kevin Love wants to play out this very lucrative contract then.
I mean, at the very least, I would enjoy Kevin Love playing well, slotting in well alongside the young core for this season and reevaluate at that point. I'm actually curious because when he, like, in the very brief amount of time he played this season, you could tell he was getting a little frustrated. Some of that was with his own play. Some of it was just mistakes and kind of preseason issues and whatnot. But
can I know another part of it?
Yeah.
It's now a meme to go get Kevin Love miserable in Cleveland. Like, he can't fucking hard sigh without, you know, the aggregation accounts going, oh, Kevin Love is fed up.
You know what? That's a good point. Like, if you really want to do that, you could do that with Garland. You could do that with Nance. You could do, like, Nance wanted to kill Jetty in that one game after miscommunication. Like, these guys communicate. They get frustrated when guys blow assignments and whatnot. Like, you can always pick that stuff out. So I think that's a good observation. But I do wonder if there's a benefit to him sitting on the bench, seeing this team play well without him. And, like, the fit for him is just so obvious. Like, he slots in so naturally to what they're doing. I wonder if there's a kind of a renewed sense of confidence of, hey, these guys already got a really good thing going on, and I can be a part of that, versus maybe his mentality before, which was true, that he needed to be superhuman in order for this team to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, ideally that, you know, there is a proof of concept now. It's a developing proof of concept, sure, but, like, this is a team that is not trash. Like, and they were the last couple of years. They were not good. I think they would tell you that. And when you're integrating into a team that's succeeding, and you could kind of hear it in the way he was talking, was like, I gotta fit in, we're building something good here, time for me to like be additive to that, as opposed to this, you know, this savior mentality.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know what, like, it's also really exciting to see him just get excited on the sideline. Like, he's been super engaged, and that was one of the things he even talked about on the road tripping episode, was just going out there and like being excited, being into each of the games. He said, look at the way that we get we support each other from the bench. It reminds him of the Lakers last year and how much fun they were having. And I mean, obviously the Cavs are not at that level of a team, but
also can I add real quick, it's also cute that Colin Sexton asks him for advice.
It is. We did find that out. If you were paying attention to that episode you weren't on with Martin Rickman, where he's talking about how often Sexton texts Love for advice. They got a nice little relationship going on. I'm enjoying the bromance starting to develop so much frustration in the past.
And only people who are paying attention are going to catch on. Like, that's kind of the fun thing, is only people who are really paying attention are going to know that those two don't hate each other, and that Colin actually, you know, and like, that's kind of the fun thing about this Colin transition, is like, he's kind of Leslie Noping it on his way to success. He's just winning over everyone with earnestness and hard work, you know. Yeah. like it's nothing, like he's not, you know, he's not doing the, like, you know, fuck the haters. He's not, you know, doing, he's like, I'm just going to work really, really hard, and eventually you're going to be on my team.
Yeah,
and it's funny because
I'm just going to outplay these guys.
Yeah, I'm just going to play. I'm going to keep working on my game. I'm going to keep showing up. I'm going to keep working harder than everyone else. I'm going to keep asking for the right advice, and eventually, you're going to love me. And it's funny because that happened with the fan base, and it also happened with his teammates.
Yeah, and it's happened, like, people outside of the fan base.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like the common consensus of Colin Sexton has swung dramatically.
It is almost universally positive at this stage.
Yeah, and for someone that's been private in the past, like, all he really sticks to is just working out and his family, like going on Zach Lowe's podcast and like showing some personality there. He posted Sexland on Instagram.
Yeah, man. I was gonna say, we shouldn't have waited this long to the podcast.
In fact,
we should have led with this. Not only did Colin Sexton officially acknowledge Sexland on an Instagram post, so did your Cleveland Cavaliers, who have been so tiptoeing on the line. They've been anxious about it. Mm-hmm. And my whole point has always been, who's getting mad at you? Who's getting mad at you for it? I'm so geeked they acknowledged it. It is, like, official now. It's on their social media. It's on their players are talking about it. I think they're in, baby.
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's so fun.
And let me remind you, sir, that after one pithy, sarcastic quote from Darius Garland, you just were ready to throw it all away.
I was. I want to respect players' wishes, but I was glad that you back-channeled a little bit and found out that he doesn't hate it. That was definitely appreciated. But yes, I do love that it's being embraced. I mean, that was the whole point of this, right? Like, it's to get a fun movement going with the Cavs. What I love about the Sexland movement is it's about those two guards together, right? Like, it's fighting the Kyrie Dion type war that people were trying to have with those two, which, by the way, offense and defense, much better when those two are together. They play really well. I think it's over a +6 net rating for those two together on the year.
Which was not always the case, by the way. Dude,
like, that's the biggest thing, especially with KPJ out in the mix, was KPJ was plan B. And now Colin Sexton is a known commodity. He is a foundational piece. We know that. Like, he is 100% that. So the fact that the Cavs have embraced Sexland, awesome. The fact that Colin Sexton has embraced it, a lot of fun. You're right. It's surprising that we've gone this long without talking about that. We're usually a whole lot more self-involved than that. But you know what? It brought warmth to my cold, dead heart.
Oh, it feels good. And it feels like, all right, you know, it's come home to roost. You know, we've been pushing this thing for over a year. I actually looked up my first Sexland tweet. It was when we debuted our shirts in early 2019, which feels like 6 years ago. And And we were just, we were ahead of the market. That's all it was.
You know what? Talking about looking back, it's funny to think. Beginning of February, this was pretty much when the Cavs traded for Andre Drummond a year ago. It was around this time. I remember going to Mexico at the time. Like, it's crazy that it is crazy that we're basically a third of the way through this season. The Cavs are in a playoff position. We're about to go head to head with a bunch of contenders, kind of testing where we're at. Trade deadline's coming up, all-star break's coming up. Like, this season's moving a whole lot quicker than I realized. And maybe it's because we're diving into each of these games and really invested with where this team's at and time's just flying by. But has all these deadlines kind of snuck up on you to some extent?
Well, just, yeah. I mean, getting past the 20% mark of the season and kind of knowing that the deadline's about a month away. It's just, yeah, it's been a fast season. I mean, that's part of the compressed schedule, but part of it's like, we had nothing for so long. We had nothing. And now it's just like, oh, another game. Oh, another game. I'm like James Wood and Family Guy, just, ooh, piece of candy. Ooh,
piece of candy.
And then all of a sudden you've had 500 Skittles. And like, that's the way I kind of feel right now. It feels like we both have a really nice sample size, but because of the way that the roster has been so divergent and so weird and, you know, injured. And like, I still haven't really gotten to see the Cavaliers, the true final form of the Cavaliers. So part of it's also felt like an extended preseason. It's been a weird year so far.
It really has. If I would have told you at the start of the season that Garland's first 10 starts would result in an average of basically 18 points, 6 assists, 48% from the floor, 49% from three, and 85% from the free throw line. Do you think your reaction would have been, oh, I bet there's a lot of people disappointed about this start?
Yeah, no. No, I wouldn't say that. But I will say with him, you know what I think it is? It's like, I think people just are still waiting on the explosiveness. You know, they're still waiting for that 30. I mean, for a scoring guard who is doing, yeah, I think maybe part of it is like, we just need to change our perspective a little bit. You know, if he's going to be someone who can average 8 assists per 36, then I don't need him to go off for 30.
Yeah.
Really ever. I mean, sure, it'd be great. But like, but you know, I think we're still, in all of our brains, he is still a scoring guard.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, God, when the Ringer talked about him, they called him a shoot first guard, which
And all three people, you know, Charks, KOC and Verrier, I think were the three on that pod. Three super plugged in people who pay a lot of attention. And they were still talking about him like he's some kind of gunner. He hasn't been that. And I think, you know, we're all still kind of waiting for that 2-3 games in a row where he puts up like 28, 26, 26.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been interesting is he's not actually a very high variance player. I mean, it's like 14 to 16 every single game, no matter what.
Yeah. And even when he starts out 2-for-8, like he usually gets his field goal percentage still, up to 50%.
Still will get you up to 14 or 16. It's fine. Yeah. But like he won't, he has not shown a lot of inclination to go much higher than that, which is interesting.
Know what it might be? We might actually be more consistent than we thought. This might be the Cavs fans just reacting to some Kyle Lowry ass play.
Oh my goodness.
Of 17-6, doing his part, getting everybody involved. We want more. We want more than just Kyle Lowry play from Darius Garland. And you know what?
And for the listeners, I just want you to know, this is Justin workshopping an annoying set of tweets. Because there's nothing to this. But he's workshopping. He's working his way towards a good bit. And he's not there yet, but this is the beginning. So when you see him tweeting all these Lowry Garland comps, a month from now, just know that this is where it started, and where it started was fucking nothing.
The gears are turning, Carter. The gears are turning. I'm ready to have some more fun. I'm excited for what he's going to do after the All-Star break. Like, we wanted like a few flashes. We wanted a few good games by the All-Star break, and like his averages are already pretty encouraging. So for him to get more comfortable, to get more confidence, for the team to hopefully shift more responsibility towards him and go to more pick and roll style play, maybe run some pin downs from off ball to get three pointers up.
Boy, would I love some pin downs.
Whew. I want it, Carter. I want it. I want to see them upset the Clippers and the Bucks here before we record. We do have a really exciting podcast coming on Sunday, though. Friend of the podcast, Andrew Sharp, makes his return.
Hopefully
we get at least one win here. It's going to be a little tough with Nance out against the Clippers, but maybe we steal one against the Bucks.
Clippers are in the second half of a back-to-back. They might do a little load management. Who's to say? I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, you know what? I'll take it. Cavs have been doing some good home cooking lately, so hopefully this continues. Hopefully Sexton keeps playing well. Maybe some more minutes with Jared Allen would be a lot of fun. But no matter what happens, make sure you listeners are still supporting us. No fair weather support here. We don't want any of that. Make sure you guys are leaving those ratings, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.